Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Gestalten. My name is Eric Galina, and I'm joined by my colleague, Martin Groschwald. Hello, Martin. How are you?
I am well. It is very early in the California morning. I'm looking out of the window. The sun is shining. It's not as warm as it was last year during that time, but it's obviously absolutely lovely to be in the sun and not in the depressing winter.
Absolutely. Well, you're making me very jealous because I am not there. I am in London where it's bone-chilling cold. So welcome to winter in Europe. But anyway, besides the weather, actually, I heard it rained yesterday, whatever, but perhaps that's neither here nor there.
It actually hailed. It actually hailed. Like, you know, it was crazy. Like, you know, the thunder was so loud. Like, everybody in the convention center was like, you know, like, oh, what was this? You know, it's like, you know, we haven't heard, you know, thunder and lightning in weeks and months here in California. So, it was not a nice day yesterday. So it was good to be inside at the show.
Welcome to global warming. So, on that note, there has been quite a lot of new developments in the automotive industry recently. Of course, there is the LA Auto Show, which is why you're out in LA right now. But there's been other vehicles that have been revealed outside of there as well. So I think, you know, in light of the fact that we're talking about global warming and the like, maybe we can kind of kick off with what's happening over in the largest car market in the U.S., which is California. There's quite a lot of things that are happening over there, specific to that market, I should say, as well. Probably the headline for me is this Mustang Mach-E that was revealed, on Sunday night, offsite at the L.A. show, but very mm-hmm. much a California market car. It's a global market car, but I mean, you know, obviously it was, I found it really interesting that they chose to show it off in Hawthorne, which is basically just a stone's throw away from Tesla's design studio. That was very interesting. But how does that, what was kind of reception? Because I know a lot of people have been moaning about the name, myself included. But, you know, as a general kind of proposal and proposition, electric car proposition from one of the biggest car makers in the world, what was your take on it? What was people's reception generally in LA?
It was extremely split, I have to say. I think the general consent was that, you know, people are very happy that Ford is finally moving towards this EV transition. The negative side of it was just like, okay, so you're using the Mustang name and you're using just another SUV. I mean, the SUV I can kind of understand as well, but using the Mustang name for a car like that was heavily criticized over here. There was very little understanding of why this happens. There were some kind of, I would say, speculation that's been going on, that they might even push Mustang as its own brand to kind of have Mustang as all the electric cars. But this has not been confirmed. This was just speculation between, you know, people I've spoken to. But in general, I mean, you know, from my personal opinion is that it's funny that it was shown in Hawthorne because it's not anywhere close to a Tesla and, you know, good enough as a Tesla. The interior is heavily inspired by the Model S and the Model 3, of course. There's just almost like three floating a screen, which is unfortunately from term ergonomics not really great because it's pretty much vertically, whereas the Tesla one is a little bit with an angle. So the verticalness is just really strange. And, you know, it's not necessarily something that looks very unique to what Ford could have come up with. It looks very much like a Ford Tesla clone, I have to say. So, you know, it depends on how you want to see it. Yes, it is an electric Ford, which is very good. I think, you know, it goes into the right direction. But in the end, it's not going to be what they all talk about as a Tesla killer or something like that. It's just too similar to a Tesla. And from a brand perspective, it's just not as sexy as a Tesla. So I think because it is in California, and hopefully, I'm not aware of any kind of pricing, but in general, it will find its customers, but it will not take away much from Tesla, unfortunately. It's not as forward-thinking or as progressive from when you see it at the show. The exterior if you want to see, like, you know, some exterior shots, just check the Concept House Instagram. I've done a lot of videos on the whole thing and on a lot of whole show, but the exterior is just nothing special, you know. So it's a very conservative approach to get into the electric market, and then using the Mustang name, you know, could be more harm than it does that it helps the Ford guys.
Yeah, so that's interesting that you say that. Obviously, like, I'm not in LA, but I have spoken to a lot of people that were involved on that project, and you know, obviously the fact that it became what it was, what it is not basically how it started out. And I think that was the work of Jason Castriota. We all know him from his Pininfarina days, and he is now over at Ford, has been for about 3 years. But I think that with his involvement now, and he's kind of the brand director for battery electric vehicles at Ford, though he was on the design side of it in the beginning, he kind of made the transition over after the vehicle was kind of in the throes. And I think the decision to kind of pivot is the word that everyone is using, because initially it didn't start off. It started off as a contemporary crossover SUV type thing that was going to be battery electric, a compliance vehicle, they're calling it, because it, you know, every automaker basically needs to create a vehicle that is going to eat up their carbon emissions, and electric vehicles basically do that. So they basically stay within the requirements of the EPA and all the rest. So but it's very interesting, that pivot into Mustangdom. And I think obviously that's got a lot of people up in arms. It was a very big internal discussion, I've heard as well. Not a lot of people were sold on it. And then they did apply some kind of Mustang traits in terms of design. But you know, the only thing that I'm not really like aware of and convinced by is the quality. Obviously, I didn't sit in the car, I didn't see it, but I did see some of your Instagram videos, and you know, it looks a bit narrower than I would imagine. But you know, really, it's very on par with an I-Pace. It's exactly pretty much it's identical in terms of dimensions. What do you think in relation to that versus the I-Pace?
Well, the I-Pace, interestingly, seems to have a very big influence on the general kind of, you know, EV, SUV direction. When we talk about the Hyundai later, there's definitely some Jaguar influence on there as well. The problem that I think the Ford has is it tries too hard to be a Mustang. You can see that it's almost like you put some decals on it, and it's like, look, like, I call it now Mustang. I put some, you know, some stuff that features by the Mustang on there. It just doesn't work for me. I mean, if they would have called that, Ford used to have a car that was called the Lightning. If they would have, you know, resurrected that car and called it the Ford Lightning Mach-E or something like that, then I think it would have been a much different kind of, you know, understanding of the customer, like the people looking at the car. When you see the Mustang, and they had, I think, you know, a bunch of Mustangs around as well, and obviously you see them here on the streets all the time, it's just like, this is not a Mustang. Like, you know, as much as you, as hard as you want to try, it's not a Mustang. And that is the feeling that you get from it. So, you know, what Jaguar did well in that sense is like taking that DNA that they had and bringing it into that kind of SUV, into that kind of I-Pace, which has worked relatively well, just does not work here. I mean, it could be any kind of car. They're trying to put some kind of, you know, Mustang elements on it, but it doesn't necessarily work, because it feels like the car, as you mentioned, started off as something completely different, and someone came in like, hey, we call this the Mustang, and put some Mustang elements into it, which is quite unfortunate, you know, because I think it's a big, you know, chance missed for Ford to make this actually really great. And there are some parts that are really great of this whole thing, but it's just not where I'm saying, like, you know, this is the revolution that you should be going for, like, you know, this evolution. I know we criticized the ID3 quite a bit with in the Frankfurt Motor Show, but that is at least a kind of development. And you can say, okay, yeah, they're going for this Ford class, but they're trying to do something a little bit different with that as well. Whereas Ford is like, I'm not so sure if they really push this hard. It seems like, you know, they are, you know, that they are trying to kind of please as many people as possible. And at that, I think they're failing.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, you know, that was the name, of course, was the biggest issue of contention for me. But the design team does make some very convincing arguments into, you know, moving the vehicle and the brand, of course, the Mustang brand is very strong, very well known into the future, really. You know, they need to do that. They can't continue to make, you know, 5-liter V8. Powered vehicles. I mean, the thing is, they're going to continue with the traditional Mustang range. It's just that they're adding, if you will, to the lineup. And so that, you know, very much so, Mustang is going to become its own brand in the stable. And that's only because Ford, along with a few other automakers, has decided that they are not going to pursue the common passenger car market, and they're going to instead focus on trucks. Mustang is going to actually move into becoming its own brand under the Ford umbrella. And that's, it's very interesting. But definitely a big issue of contention. The Lightning name, of course, like that's, I made a post a couple of days ago myself. Like that is totally what I believed that, you know, they should have called it, because Lightning is also a bit of an iconic vehicle. There's a few cars that actually make reference to electricity in their name, which could have totally been used, but perhaps it wasn't as strong in the eyes of the marketing department. And that's basically what it's come down to, I guess. But there's a petition, interesting enough, to change the name. There's a petition out right now, which is hilarious.
Which I've signed they should probably go for that. Yeah, they should change that name. That really is a silly name.
But anyway, so that aside, then it's I mean, it would have been good to see that vehicle in person, but I'm sure we'll have occasion to, because it will be a global car and it will sell in the three main markets worldwide. So Europe, US, and China, of course, as well. So it'll be really interesting to see what the public's kind of perception is of that, and whether or not it sells well. We'll have to wait and see. But in terms of other kind of developments over there, reveals, big V reveals, what were some of the bigger ones? Because, you know, it seems like LA, it's always hit or miss in LA. You never really know if you're going to get something, a really good show. I mean, auto shows have been waning in the last few years anyway, in terms of interest. What's the general vibe over there in LA? And you know, are there any really interesting debuts? What's the feeling?
I have to say, I focused more a little bit on the concepts, or the more mass market cars. Of course, there have been quite a lot of reveals and, you know, world premieres on very American specific cars, like, you know, Mercedes GLS, which is an absolutely massive, you know, almost van style car that Mercedes have revealed over here. Very likely not coming over to Europe or anywhere else in the world because of just simply of its size. Over here, it's a little bit bigger than the midsize, but, you know, that's just the way it is. In terms of a design perspective, I think for me personally, the most interesting one was actually the Karma SC2. The Karma SC2 is about 80% done car. It's very close to production already. They probably have to change the lights and all, you know, some kind of things like that. But it's simply a beautiful car. It's, you know, the surfacing was fantastic. We have spoken a little bit to Andreas Turner, but mainly to Andre Lewis from the interior team at Karma, and he gave us a little bit of a rundown of the car, like showed us everything, and that was really, 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 really cool. I think it's a very like high level luxury car. They will not make that many of them. It will be a production car, of course, but they will not make, you know, thousands of them. And for the direction that Karma wants to go into, it's a fantastic little car. It very much draws back to the simplicity, like, you know, older Aston Martins, similar to what Ferrari is now doing with the Roma, you know, going back to beauty as well. And the exterior was great. The interior is really cool as well. It's a two-seater. It's still driver-focused. It apparently, you know, I'm obviously very careful with these numbers, but it reaches 1 to 60 in 1.9 seconds on full electric power. So the thing would be an absolute beast if it would come onto the streets like that. But it was just in terms of design, it was just beautiful to look at. Is that going to be a car for the masses? Absolutely not. But it was literally just beautiful to look at. And the kind of coolest concept that, you know, Volkswagen had this little dune buggy thing there, which was just like, you know, it's like a Baja truck or whatever it is, which was pretty cool. Mercedes had this carriage there that they have shown already on pictures for the opening of the new Nice studio in France. It was the first time I've ever seen it, which was pretty cool, I have to say. But apart from that, which is obviously, let's say, apart from the Karma, which is close to production, about 80% to close to production, we were talking here about, you know, fun cars, concept cars, those kind of things. Things that were close to production or aiming for production, that was actually quite a big of disappointment. And for me, I'm going to say something similar that I did for the Frankfurt show. I'm not quite sure if coming back next year to LA is actually worth it. Because what we have seen here this year, which includes the Audi e-tron, like, you know, I've seen personally the Corvette for the first time here, the new one, the Volkswagen ID Space Vision, which is going to be the new Passat, you know, that Hyundai concept as well, is like these cars don't justify coming here for the show. So at least not on the aspect that we're here from, you know, for is like the design perspective, and, you know, obviously talking to designers is a different story of that. That's always great to meet up with the guys, but just, you know, from a design push perspective, I'm not sure if this is actually worth coming here, or if I should go just to CES and see, like, you know, if the more advanced stuff and the more, like, you know, what's happening in the future stuff will actually happen there. And that was a bit of a disappointment, I have to say.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's just the general vibe, I think, generally, is, you know, whether these shows are kind of worth it in terms of the cars that you're able to consume there in person. Obviously, you know, liaising with you know, your friends and speaking to design colleagues and, you know, that all kind of descend upon there, certainly from the U.S. manufacturers and all of the studios that are in California. It's definitely worth it from that perspective. But then, you know, it can be argued, seeing as it's so close to the Guangzhou show, which is taking place, I think it kind of kicks off this weekend, or maybe even tomorrow. You know, China is still a hotbed for automotive, you know, shows, you know, salons and auto shows. So it seems like perhaps that is the better bet in terms of, you know, going out and seeing a chunk of new metal. But the relationships, I think, are very important as well. But anyway, so there was nothing really like worth seeing. I mean, you know, you mentioned this Mercedes Vision Simplex concept, but that, you know, there was a lot of things that have been shown elsewhere before. As you mentioned, it was unveiled at Nice. Was there anything that was really like worthwhile and relevant? Like what's the deal with the Hyundai concepts or the Vision T, and also the Kia as well, which is a new car?
So let's start off with the Hyundai. The Hyundai had some interesting parts of it, but it's just too busy. I was wandering around with a few designers actually, and we were looking into that kind of car, and one of the guys said, look, the latest trend that's going on is that all the designers want to hide the lights. So the lights should become pretty much part of, you know, of the entire exterior. So when they're off, you don't see them. And when you turn them on, that's when you see the lights. And the Hyundai was very much working with that from the front area. But what I just don't understand is this is such a heavy parametric car. The side view is extremely busy with, you know, weird angles, lines that are going everywhere. The rear is actually really nice. That worked out really nicely, and like in when you see it in the flesh and when you stand behind it. But I just wasn't sure if
what this is going to preview or what this is supposed to show, or like, you know, what the plan with this is. You know, is this just that they wanted to show, hey, we have the capability of using parametrics? Like, Hyundai has done better stuff. And if I compare this to the Frankfurt show and to the Frankfurt car, this is going to completely different kind of direction. You know, at Frankfurt, they were like in this clean environment. They were trying to show, you know, simplicity. Now they're going back to complexity. They're going to, like, you know, sometimes having really big issues of interpreting the whole thing. This car also didn't have an interior, which I think was an absolute shame. Like, you know, don't go to car shows anymore without an interior. Like, you know, what's going on with that? I don't just want to see the exterior.
That's always been a big issue with me. Yeah, I definitely want to see an interior.
Yeah, and like, so, you know, for me, this is what I'm saying. This is like, you know, the general kind of idea of that Hyundai show car is like, I just don't get it. Like, you know, there's too many elements going on that if it would have much more refinement and, like, you know, more of that work that they've put into the Frankfurt car, the simplicity, this could have been actually really good and could have been very close to a future production. A production car, SUV or whatever, you know, crossover, those kind of things could have been. But for a show car, like a concept or whatever they wanted to do with that, I don't know, man. That was not great. Speaking of the Kia, they had the Habanero there, which I just love by its name. that was a car that they first shown in New York. I think it was in April or something like that. And it was the first time I've ever seen it. And we raved about this when we did the New York show podcast as well. And this was, you know, when I saw it, I was like, this is so cool. This is tiny. This is modern. It plays with colors. You know, it was unfortunately closed, so we couldn't get into the interior and sit down. But this was just day and light of difference, you know. And also the Hyundai was so dark. They've used these like ultra dark colors that was just like, you know, it seems like you maybe want to, you know, you want to cover up some of your mistakes, whereas the Habanero was just young, it was fresh. Where I'm saying, like, yeah, this was great. This was really, really good fun. So, you know, day and night, pretty much, unfortunately, from the Hyundai group. And something that I don't want to talk pretty much about is that new Genesis G90, because that grille is just absolutely enormous. You know, it's, I don't know, it's not my cup of tea to have these kind of grills, but Hyundai, day and night, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know, perhaps, as you say, you know, they're when I first saw that car, it screamed parametric, and that's what I wrote in a little caption on when I published a little thing on social media when I saw it in first last night. But it's perhaps, you know, like you mentioned, the Concept 45 that was in Frankfurt, that was an homage to Giugiaro. But again, there was also some notion that it would be the future of the company's design direction. At least that's what was being said. So perhaps they're still testing the capabilities of, you know, of all of these new digital tools that are at their disposal. But perhaps also they're testing, you know, feedback from various markets into which design direction they would ultimately choose to go in. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I think it's interesting, it's appealing, but it is far, far complex and far more complex indeed than the Concept 45. But
yeah, just to kind of put this on there, I mean, it on the pictures, you know, the silhouettes and stuff like that, they do necessarily work. I've just opened up the pictures that I took yesterday. But when you're in the flesh over there, you know, it's just too much going on. That's really the point for me. It's just like I was overwhelmed. I was like, I don't even know which line I should look at. You know, there's a bump here, there's a bump there. It's just a bit too much. So even if it's exaggerated, it's too much exaggerated.
Right. All right. I got you. But the Habanero isn't actually the Kia that I was referencing, because the all new car is the Seltos, which is basically an entry level, you know, to compete in the smaller SUV range. And that to me looks quite interesting. I mean, it's certainly, you know, Kia's design theme for, you know, in terms of simplicity, it's far more simple and utilitarian, even, shall we say, than what Hyundai's been putting out in recent times. It's blocky. I mean, it still has some, you know, volume and presence in the body side. It's not slab sided, but it's very much following on from the Telluride, the bigger brother. What was that like reception to, you know, how was that in the flesh?
It looks much better than Telluride. The Telluride is just massive. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but we saw the Telluride last year already. So this time, you know, I think we were actually sitting in one as well and driving around in one. But
yes, I remember that.
So the Seltos is indeed the smaller brother, but it's much more. The proportions work much better. I think, you know, they're using this more. A bolder color statement with it as well. The Telluride in like this year's show and last year's show, they've shown in very conventional colors, like, you know, black and silver and brown and all these kind of things. This one comes in, you know, some crazy funky colors. So it's much more going to be a car that can also come over to Europe, also in terms of its size. Mm. And it has much more of this, I would say, European Kia direction in it. The Telluride is very American. Like, you know, you can see that in the way it looks, the way it, you know, the interior as well. The Seltos is more of a European kind of take on this. So it has reminded me much more of the Kia Soul, for example. It has reminded me much more of you know, the Optimas and stuff like that. So more like, you know, the sedan range. So this is where it becomes really interesting, because it's not necessarily, if you look at it, an American car. It is more of a world car, or like, you know, a global car. And for that, you know, kudos to Kia, because it's in the flesh, you know, it's well proportioned for an SUV. It's well, you know, the front is nice, has some nice little details on it as well. And it's not what other people want to do. It's not going to change the world, but it's just a very solid car. Again, I'm not sure about the pricing, but, you know, I think it's going to be very competitive. So, you know, Kia continuously is doing a good job. And the car that we're not going to talk about in this podcast, but probably in another one, the new Optima that they've shown as well, is going into a very similar direction. You know, with what they're doing. So that was definitely the right one. And that's what I mentioned with, like, you know, day and night. I mean, if I have that, if I have the Seltos, if I put the Habanero in there as well, that is just cool. You know, they know what kind of customer group they want to go for. And it seems more like the Telluride is a little bit out of that entire context, even here in the US, where that seems like a car that we have to do. And the Seltos is the car that you can say, like, hey, yeah, this is actually the people we want to attract.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Kia's always done very good in terms of market research and appealing to people that, you know, are indeed very price conscious. I mean, they're always very competitively priced against their competitors, like the Telluride, for example. If you price that against one of the even American big threes, like from Chevrolet or GM brands, so, you know, the Yukon, for example, the Tahoe, they're like way more expensive than the Telluride. So it's a very appealing, I think, proposition for someone that needs a vehicle that size. But I do agree with you, there is more of a European sensibility, not only from a size perspective, but generally looking at the Seltos. And I hope that it does come to Europe, because I think it would be actually quite a successful proposition for Kia. In, you know, small SUVs are hugely popular, so it would be a shame not to see it here. And indeed, it wouldn't. It would probably sell quite well, I'd imagine. So yeah,
that would be a car for the mass market, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a couple of other things that I know of that were revealed, but which one would you say was more impactful next in your list?
I would probably say the ID Space Vision. A Volkswagen concept, you know, a good outlook for a production car, as we obviously know by now. Volkswagen, they don't do crazy show cars. They don't do crazy concepts and those kind of things. They always build these show cars based on their production platform. And the ID Space Vision is pretty much a preview of the next Passat. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing actually about it was that the front, there's some parametrics in there as well. It's just like, guys, if you want to use parametrics, use them properly and not just use them so that they're there. That's my first criticism of the whole thing. But the interesting one that I saw, or that I found when I stood next to the car, was that there is a lot of inspiration from Škoda on this one. If you look into the belt line, if you have the front three-quarter unit, look into the belt line, this looks very much like a Škoda to me, like the simplicity of it, you know, the way the lines go, the way the surfaces work, the volumes work. I was just like, wow, this looks very, very close to a Škoda. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be a Passat, but maybe it could be also a future Škoda for that sense. So, that was extremely interesting. The interior was a bit of a surprise. There were absolutely no buttons in there. They've kept it extremely clean. I don't think that Volkswagen will do anything like that. I don't think that from their strategy that will work. But that was actually good. It was it was very tidy in there. The interior was white, I think, if I remember, but that wasn't, you know, I just don't like white interiors, so I don't know why people still do that, but fair enough, I'll take that. And there was this little anecdote I want to tell. It was like, you know, there was this marketing guy, and he was like, oh, come on, guys, I'll show you something really cool. And he was like, all right, let's go there. So he opened up the boot, and then he opened up a lid in the boot, or a trunk for our American listeners. And he opened this up, and there was a couple of skateboards in there. And I was just like, guys, we have seen that so many times. This is nothing special. I think this is something they were just like, oh, we're going to California. Like, you know, let's do that. And you saw that the people walking away is like, we have seen this before from like Audi and like so many other companies. Like, this is just not cool anymore. And for what Volkswagen is doing, you know, it fits into the family and everything like that. But it is pretty much the preview of the next Passat, I would say. Yeah. And for that, actually, it was quite nice. But also, again, obviously, it's Volkswagen, so don't expect any kind of revolution from them. They're way too big to do that. As a brand, Volkswagen itself is obviously way too big, much more way too conservative to push for something like that, apart from maybe some colors, you know, the C-pillar down to the on the roof line, and then going into the hood was all in one color, so it was a little bit of a two-tone touch to it as well. So that was not bad, but this was the furthest I think, you know, Volkswagen will go into being a little bit more progressive. But it was definitely, and this was the thing, is I had a little bit of a chat conversation after I posted the video with someone that I know who is somehow affiliated with Volkswagen. And he said, like, you know, yeah, but don't expect big things from them. And I was like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, just like, you know, I would love to see a bit more, but it's a rock solid car. You know, it's Volkswagen at its best. It's rock solid. Like, it goes into the right direction. It's just nothing where I put it on my top list, because it's nothing that will blow you away or anything that you will remember in 2-3 weeks time. But when you're there, you see that the craftsmanship and the knowledge of building cars is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, what struck me was, you know, in looking at that car from your videos as well, is just how long it is. I mean, this is a 5 meter long car. It's very, very long. But, you know, so by Volkswagen standards, it's almost kind of, you know, just going up a segment into so I don't know. I mean, the Passat's not nearly that long. I mean, the Phaeton perhaps was, but that was, you know, an A8 kind of, you know, level of size. I mean, you know, it's hard to judge a vehicle when it's not in front of you. You know, so it's really difficult for me to kind of convey, you know, from the pictures that I've seen, what this thing actually is like. But I mean, it is a concept. I really, really like the clean interior. It's probably, you know, pretty close, I would say, to production. The ID3 had a very similar treatment to the roof as well, in terms of the two-tone colorways. But yeah, I mean, I do hear what you're saying regarding the shoulder line and you know how it's undercut, and you know it still has some kind of luxury, if you will, emotional surfacing in the body side, but it's very pure and simple, much like Skoda. So I can definitely see the relation there. But I do like that. But again, it seems like it's a really, really long car. Really very, very big.
It is a long car. Obviously, this is the funny thing is when you walk through LA and the motor show in particular, these cars for the European market, where we would say they're long, they don't seem to be very long over here because it's just like, size is just completely different. What I want to say about the Volkswagen, what I found really annoying was the rear lights. You would think like, do something new, like, Ford, if you drive on the highway here and you see, I think it's a Ford Explorer or like a Ford Flex or whatever it's called. They have exactly the same lights and they've had those for like years and years and years. And when I saw the lights on the Volkswagen, I was just like, hey, this looks like a Ford. And so they could have done something completely different with the lights and play around with them a little bit further. And again, this kind of theme and the general theme of hiding the lights, especially in the front, is done by the Volkswagen as well, because if you look into it, it's hidden in this parametric structure. It's hidden pretty much in the hood as well, so when they're off, you don't really see them, and when they're on, that's when you see them. So that's definitely the trend that's been going on for a little bit now, but it's becoming clearer and clearer. And I think the American market likes this in particular, because if you think about the indicator signals that you have over here that are not as they are in Europe in yellow, but they can be also in red. So you have the braking light in red and then the indicating lights in red as well. To move this into one seamless kind of lighting structure is becoming a very interesting thing, I think, for the American market, the way it seems a little bit. Not sure if that's possible for the European market due to regulations, but over here, very interesting and a very, very clear development from that. And Volkswagen shows that again.
Yeah, and I never really understood why they, would have a red turn signal. I mean, I know Jeeps, used to have to change the tail lamp housing just because to basically adhere to the laws in Europe. And it's strange. I don't know. I think yellow is a much better identifying color for a turn signal. You want to be seen. You want to know what it is and what it does. So I never really understood why red. But anyway, okay. So good. Well, moving on. I think from this ID space vision concept. There's perhaps another VW Group branded product, which was the e-tron Sportback, making its debut in LA.
Wow.
What's your take on that?
Audi did not have a good show stand this year. It was incredibly packed, and not packed of people, but packed of cars in a relatively small space. The e-tron Sportback is a crossover, and you see the car, it looks exactly like an e-tron. The only thing that they have changed is they made it a crossover out of it. So the back, goes down a little bit further, like a little bit faster. That's why it's called the Fastback, and the Sportback in that sense. I don't like it. This was something for me. It's like, it's too aggressive, even for the electric version, the e-tron. It doesn't have any kind of appeal to me to look at it for longer than 3 seconds. It started to turn and, I was like, oh, cool. I can see the front. I can see the rear. I can see everything of the car. It's just not a nice overall picture. There's too much aggressiveness into this. They have not figured out the grill. Obviously, they haven't done it on the e-tron, what to do with that and, how to, make it part of the entire structure. I guess they have to do that kind of car just because, crossover, especially SUV crossovers, are so popular at the moment. You've seen a lot of them driving around here, especially, the GLCs and the GLEs of Mercedes. They're probably gonna sell, but design wise, this was, this was nothing new. This was like when Porsche came up with the, I think it was Macan Coupe or something like that. The same thing.
It's just Cayenne, like, okay, I think it was
or the Cayenne, yeah, sorry. Yeah. So like it's the same thing. You do that for the market, but design-wise, this has absolutely no, you know, no right to be there because it takes away space. So like you have an SUV that you're supposed to give you space, and then it's just high, but it, you know, the coupe versions and the fastback and sportsback, they just take away the space. So from that perspective, not impressed at all. And then that was the really ironic thing is like on the left on the turntable, they had the e-tron sportback just kind of promoting their electric abilities and stuff like that. And then literally 10 meters away from that, they had the RSQ8, you know, and they advertised it like, this is the most powerful SUV, like, you know, in Europe or whatever, like, you know, for, I don't know what they did with that. It's just like, guys, you know, it has a V8 engine, I think, like a V6 turbo or what, well, I don't even know. But on the one hand, you have this electric thing. And on the other hand, you have what you advertise as the fastest kind of SUV that you've ever built. And, you know, the most powerful. It's like, this doesn't go together. So the entire story that Audi was trying to sell over there was just so flawed. And it seemed like, oh, crap, we have to show something in LA that fits into the market over there. Oh, so let's just do quickly this this e-tron sportback. And, like, you know, let's try to bring this into production as quickly as possible. Because the overall picture was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I just don't get it. Like, you know, Ford at least did a very convincing electrification stand as well. Of course, they had some of the pickups there, but it made a lot of sense to have that. Whereas with Audi, it was more like, oh, let's throw something in there with electric just to kind of please the masses. Absolutely no touch for, in my opinion, what California is nowadays all about.
Yes, well, perhaps, but I mean the RS line is something that's massively successful for Audi, and you know, I mean the RS6 has a V10 engine for crying out loud. So, you know, this Q8 with close to 600 horsepower out of it is a mild hybrid. I mean, it is a hybrid power plant. Obviously, it's made it to a V8 engine, but you know, it does have some electrification capabilities as well, but I guess, you know, seeing that car against the Sportback would have been a bit of a shock, perhaps. But you know, e-tron isn't really changing the game all that much. They have a bit of different design details, but ultimately, I mean, you know, the fact that this is an SUV coupe is, you know, it's not necessary. People buy SUVs for different reasons, right? I mean, it's not just about the practicality. It's an image thing. It's a ride height thing. It's a higher H point, easier ingress, egress. So there's a whole range and multitude of different reasons why they buy them, but it's an image car more than anything. And that's why, you know, the e-tron Sportback following on from the conventional regular SUV e-tron, it just kind of, you know, to flesh out the brand, I guess, a little bit, but I see your point. And but yeah, in terms of a style car, LA is all about, you know, cars that you buy that you can't even afford because it says something about your image because you spend so much time in it. And I think I made a reference to this the last time we were in LA. It's, you know, you see guys that are driving Aston Martins, but they still live at home with mom, you know, so it's a very different thing. You know, people in Europe, for example, in big cities, don't necessarily even like a car. It's not even an image statement, certainly for millennials anymore. But over there in LA, it's still very much part of your identity.
Yeah, that's very true. And I mean, I mean this in a more global way because we go to so many car shows, of course, that the general kind of, you know, disappointment I have with Audi in that sense is coming from, you know, the look of what they did in Frankfurt and Geneva and all these things. So that was more like a yearly, let's say like a yearly review that culminated over here in LA. But unfortunately, that's the kind of feeling I had. Like they didn't put a lot of emphasis on California. It's more, you know, I had a little bit of the feeling that the Germans, especially over here, they're living by the brand image rather than slowly understanding that things are changing over here. And in terms of EV, you know, nobody is even close to the guys over here at Tesla. No one, you know. I think like Rivian and Lucid, they will have a shot at it as well here in California. Obviously, Rivian being in Detroit, apart from that, the car, you know, the traditional car industry have not understood what the electric vehicles are all about, or companies such as Tesla are all about. And that's why they're just going to continue doing what they're doing without having a clue why Tesla works, or maybe why Tesla doesn't work in certain areas. So that was, again, this kind of point over here in LA at the show. It's just like, you know, Tesla doesn't even need to be here, and it's the talk of the town because they're showing the pickup truck. And that's where it becomes interesting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why Rivian is so important as well. I mean, the pickup market is huge, California being the biggest market in California, and, you know, in the U.S. rather. It's very important to have a pickup truck, an electric vehicle, guys. And I think that's why Rivian is going to just kill it. But of course, Tesla is up in their game, and they're going to show it off tonight, I believe, the new pickup truck. So that's going to be very interesting to see if it looks anything like the renderings that I've seen. We'll see if that's the case. But I'm really very much looking forward to seeing that vehicle.
Yeah. All right. Shall we? I think in terms of LA, there's not that much more to talk about.
Well, what about Faraday? Because that was something that kind of appealed to me as well. We saw the interior of the FF91 finally. Did you see it at the show, or?
So we can now finally talk about this in detail. When we were here last year, we were allowed to visit Faraday, and they showed us the interior that they've shown at the show. Actually, before the show actually started, they had this event, which I didn't go to. Where they presented the interior. So I've already known the interior for over a year now in terms of what it looks like. So it's still exactly the same. And it is, I think a lot of people said like, oh, you know, it's overloaded with technology and is it still like, you know, relevant and all these things. And I say, look, the interesting thing with the Faraday is don't see the Faraday for me personally as a private car. You know, see that as a car that will probably come pick you up from the airport. It could be like, you know, Uber X or something like that. The thing is spacious as hell. This thing is so big. You have so much space in there. You know, the seats are ultra comfortable. The interior, in particular, the driver's area is extremely clean. They have this little bar that shows you how fast you go. Like, you know, you turn left, you turn right, and that's pretty much it. It's incredibly clean. And then when you're the passenger in the front, this is when the entertainment starts and everything that you can do on the screen. So it's very much the way you have to imagine it. It's more like the driver sitting in his little cockpit, and everybody who's a passenger has a screen, has some kind of connectivity, things they can put on screens. And it's just, don't see it as a driver's car. See it as a car that you're being driven in. That's what I have to say. That was the feeling that I had when we were there a year ago and we looked into the whole thing. This is more a luxury, modern technology Rolls Royce than it is a, you know, 7 Series BMW that you technically want to drive yourself. It's just a much more different kind of approach to how it is. And for that, it's extremely impressive. I think some parts are just too digitalized. So, you know, when you sit in your driver's seat or in your passenger seat, you have a little screen where you can change, you know, your, I think it's like, you know, your seat warming options, you have, your AC options and all these kind of things. And all is done on a screen, which I think is a little bit too much. I don't think you need screens for that. But apart from that, it is not bad at all. I actually, when I sat in it, I did really, really enjoy sitting there. And I remember talking to Paige Berman when he showed us the car, and like, he's like, oh, look at this and this and that. And I was like, look, Paige, if you pick me up in the airport from this thing, I'm going to be a happy person because it is very comfortable.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, it's the first time that we've seen pictures revealed of this, but, you know, this is a car that Pontus Fonteis would have been working on back in, you know, and he's been at GAC now almost 3 years. So, I mean, this car is, you know, it's been finished for a long time. The only thing that I question is, you know, yes, it is very kind of technologically advanced, and, you know, it looks to be really, you know, beautifully appointed. I mean, it's Like you say, it's much more of a limousine in a crossover vehicle, so not the long wheelbase that we know of limousines in the U.S. But it's very much a service car. It looks like, you know, not something that you'd want to kind of drive yourself, but certainly for rear passengers, you know, and in China, for example. But yeah. It's the thing that I kind of question is all of this tech, because it's so technologically laden, is that, you know, because it's going on 3 years, maybe even 4 years that, you know, this has been signed off and done and developed, whilst, you know, Faraday's still kind of trying to get the cash together in order to put it into production. It's like technology dates super fast. That's why we get a new iPhone every year, right? So what's going to happen? What's going to happen when this finally hits the showroom floor or whatever, the internet website, and you can order one? But they're not, they don't have a stand in LA then, do they?
No, they were just there. They were just there, I think, on the day before the show actually opened, on like the tech day. They showed the car there. Canoe was there as well, as far as I know. Again, I wasn't there, unfortunately. So that's kind of weird, because you would have hoped Canoe to be there, you know, permanently to show off what they're doing. Faraday being there permanently to show off what they're doing. So it's you know, they've missed out an opportunity, I think, as the show organizers. I don't blame Faraday or Canoe not to be there and to kind of mingle if they don't want to with the traditional industry. But, you know, for the broad public, it would have been absolutely fantastic to see these kind of things and see, you know, what else is being done. But I do 100% agree. The problem is with the Faraday, does the technology date well, because the car has been pretty much finished for about 3 years, 2 years now.
Yes, no, definitely. Nice. Okay. Well, okay. So I guess, you know, maybe we can just wrap it up from the LA show, and start talking about other things that were unveiled in recent times that are not in LA. I mean, Porsche's in LA, but they didn't show anything interesting, right? And last year they showed the 911. Nope. So, you know, they're not doing new cars every year. But there was one car that has basically set the internet on fire this last week, and that's the Aston Martin DBX. That's, you know, Aston's first SUV in its 105-year history. To me, it looks pretty damn good. And you've actually seen this car in person, because you went to some owner's whatever event in Munich. So tell us about your initial thoughts over there.
So I got to see the car about 2 weeks ago at this you know, at this special preview event in the Munich Aston dealership. And what I want to say up front is, like, I didn't see the car here at the LA Motor Show. So wherever they presented is not at the LA show. So if you see any pictures out of LA, must have been somewhere else. I was only capable of seeing the car from about, like, you know, maximum like 5 meters away from the exterior, because they had this box around it, and you can only, you know, you can only walk inside this box when I was there. So I can only give you that kind of impression. In general, in short, what I like, the front, they went back to the, you know, one of my favorite cars, one car I own as well, 2005 V8 Vantage front, a closed front with the grille being prominent but not overly prominent. They included the new Vantage lights onto that kind of car, which I'm not 100% sure if that works. The side view of the car, at least from like the distance I've seen it, looks very, very similar to a Porsche. That probably has something to do with just how an SUV works. So there's not that much of flexibility, and especially in that kind of category that you want to move into, and the kind of, let's say, motto that Aston Martin still wants to live by, which I believe they don't do anymore, but, you know, this kind of beauty is everything, or whatever they call it. So they're a little bit limited, but it looks very much like a Porsche. And the rear, unfortunately, and I have no idea why they have done that, they just copied from the new Vantage. So it has this fat lip pretty much on the rear with just a kind of a weird proportion in total, because the car is very sleek, and then you have the fat lip to give it some kind of sportiness or whatever. I have no idea. And that is just weird. It's just a weird kind of exterior for an Aston. What I want to say as well, this is probably one of the most beautiful SUVs. It's definitely not one of the most beautiful cars. This is what people get wrong with this. They see Aston Martin, they think it's a beautiful car. It's like, no. This is a nice looking SUV. It is not a beautiful car. That's the most important thing to say. And the worst part is, and this is something that maybe Aston cannot do for, the interior is not great. If you sit in a car, again, like the Faraday, it's extremely spacious. It's very comfortable. You know, they have some cool little, you know, gadgets in there as well. But it's just entirely overloaded with buttons. They are unfortunately in a situation because they are using AMG engines that they are required to use the last generation Mercedes infotainment system, which was not great. And it wasn't great in its day when it came out. And it's definitely not great where we are at the moment. So it just kind of lacks through that. And if I would buy a 200,000 euro car, which is, you know, how much this car is, with that kind of interior, I would feel that I'm being, you know, they just want to like, you know, ramp up, you know, their kind of margin or whatever, because that is really a disappointment in terms of what you get for the money that you pay, which is a little bit down to the fact, of course, that they have this corporation. But if I think I've counted it, I think I came down to like 40 something buttons that are on the steering wheel, in the middle console, and all these kind of things. And it's just so overloaded with everything that's going on, that I'm just saying like, no, thank you. Like, you know, if I want to have an overloaded car, I can, you know, buy a Lamborghini, because that's what they're doing in terms of interior oftentimes with all the switches and stuff, but that's cool. But for me, that kind of luxury, and if I think about it, I've spoken to a couple of the salespeople then at this event, and I was just like, so I have so many buttons here. If I think that now Aston wants to go more into like, you know, a female ownership direction, because this is one of the big things that they want to do with the DBX, I have so many buttons. I have maybe two kids in the bag. You know, I don't even know where I'm supposed to look at. And that's where the real disappointment for me comes in, is just to say, hey, we try to do a luxury car, but the content, especially on the interior that is there, is not luxury whatsoever.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, that's an unfortunate effect, if you will, of sharing these components with Daimler. So they've got second generation Daimler switchgear and things of that nature, certainly in the infotainment system, and everything is straight out of the Daimler parts bin. It's necessary, as you say, for in terms of cost savings. But again, I mean, we're looking at a car that is 158,000 pounds starting. So it's basically a direct competitor to a Bentayga. It's far more expensive than a Bentayga from a starting price. It's more on par, if you will, with a Lamborghini Urus. So that is, you know, going to be extremely expensive. It's not in Cullinan territory. And, you know, the Range Rover SV autobiography also undercuts it. But also it's, you know, the autobiography is on par with the Bentley Bentayga. So it's, you know, these super luxury SUVs, I mean, you know, they certainly have a place, certainly in terms of attracting a female demographic into the brands. As you mentioned, you know, that's clearly, you know, something that is a huge win for brands. Is, you know, it's not just men that buy cars, right? But definitely from an exterior perspective, you know, I mean, I've watched a couple of videos, I've seen a few things, but initially when I saw it, you know, it definitely has shades of the Porsche Cayenne in the front end. But you know, the Vantage rear is definitely something that, in my opinion, that makes it stand out and stand apart from the others, and something that I really do quite like. And I always talk about, you know, pushing the boundaries and doing something different. And I mean, this certainly does. Like, granted, it's not probably going to be to everyone's taste. But you know, to me, again, just looking at it in a few videos and photographs, I think that is one of the most appealing aspects of that vehicle, is the fact that they did have the balls to do that. And it's very sporty looking. It's, you know, definitely has a hell of a lot of character, in what would normally be a pretty, you know, non-event. You know, it's an SUV, right? But I think the Aston team did do some very, very good things. And also, I mean, you talk about the interior. It's not the greatest in terms of infotainment and all the rest, but you know, one thing that Aston does have is the attention to detail, and some of, you know, the trim on the seats in particular, and all of this, like, it's like embroidery. It's like really makes you feel like you're in something special.
Yeah, I think it's this is the thing. You know, Aston was always great on details, and color and trim for them was always, like, you know, very, very high level, very important, you know, the hand stitching and all these kind of things. So, and that's not what I mean, but unfortunately, Aston was also very weak and has always been very weak on, you know, interior ergonomics and, you know, interior, just the pure kind of style of it and, like, you know, how to do it in the best way. And they were able to cash that quite nicely with the quality of the color and trim and the quality of the materials that they're using. So that is very, very true. But it comes back to this problem. It's like, yes, that's what I mentioned. Like, you know, for an SUV, this is a nice looking car. For an Aston Martin, no, it's not a nice looking car, because that comes with just the problem of the SUV, I would think. There's much more beautiful cars that they have in the lineup, but I do understand that they have to go into that. But I'm just disappointed. I'm not saying this from an owner, but like from an owner's perspective, but from a quality perspective and from a design perspective as well, they could have done much better in terms of making this a more drivable experience, a more driver-friendly experience, you know, making it cleaner, bringing back the simplicity into everything. But they are just lacking, I think, that kind of, they have been lacking that quality in a long time. The new Vantage wasn't great in interior, you know, DB11 wasn't great in interior, DBS neither. So maybe they should have to have a look into that in a little bit more detail and see what can we do to really enhance this outer experience, which is pleasant, and bring it really back into the inside experience. Because I've spoken at this event to a few guys, and they said exactly the same. They were just like, well, you know, maybe, yeah, but, you know, I could buy like another car that has a much more easier to use system, a much better infotainment system, you know. So there is definitely questions for me about the DBX. Will it sell? Yes, it will sell. But will it sell as many cars as Andy Palmer, who's the CEO of Aston, predicts it will sell? I'm not sure about that. This could really be close for Aston to survive, because I don't think it is as good as it could have been. And for the price that they're asking for, so the German selling price is 192K, but I was told, like, realistically, you should probably have some extras in it. So that makes it about 205,000 euros to make it the car that you should have. And that's crazy for, you know, what I see on the interior, and especially the infotainment system that you see, because then you buy the brand, which is understandably and stuff like that. But for 200 grand, I can probably buy a Lamborghini Urus with much better infotainment and, you know, much better, you know, interior setup as well, if I like that kind of car. I'm not saying they're competing in the same customer group, because I think Aston customers are a bit different than Lambo customers, but for the money that you spend, as the Germans like to say, you know, the price that you pay for the quality that you get, probably not 100% there.
Yeah, you know, but maybe, but you still couldn't get a Colin in for that, and you'd have to pay about 50K more for that. So, I mean, it's all relative, right?
That's true.
If you're willing to spend that money, I don't know if 50K is going to bother you, but you know, certainly it's in the upper reaches there for you know, regular everyday people. So, all right, well, there's been a couple of other things that are more perhaps to your taste, more along your lines, so non-SUV, that we've seen revealed in recent times, and that would be, well, there's two.
Unfortunately, I have to say, we have to move those to the next one, because unfortunately I have to leave, because we have to get out of our you know, Airbnb that we have here. But we will talk about the Ferrari and the McLaren in particular on the next podcast episode, because, you know, we will not forget about those, and they are pretty cool from both levels. But unfortunately, I will have to leave.
All right, man. Cool. Well, it's been good chatting. Enjoy your time in LA. Enjoy the sunshine.
And, thank you very much.
We'll catch you on the next one. And meanwhile, if you'd like to follow us, you can catch me, Eric, at Form Trends, or Martin at Concept House on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the rest, all that good stuff. And we will catch you guys on the next one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.